Raising Playful Tots, show number 131. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Raising Playful Tots. I'm glad that you could stop by today. My name is Melissa. Welcome to the Play Space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids so that we get to introduce a new play idea or two. If you're new to the show, welcome, and hi to the regular playmates. There's plenty of room, so come join us as we play with making an African mask today, thanks to a fabulous project by Art Chu using gesso and plaster strips at artchu.com/African Mask Project. Last week's show, I shared our Parenting Mantras Hangout. This was a YouTube video hangout that we did on Google+, and we took the video and just swapped it out and used the audio version, and you heard that last week on the show. We got to share our mantras with Kate of Pickle Bums, and we also had Catherine of Indirect Observations. I have a printable there of the parenting mantras on the show notes if you'd like to download them there. I know some of you have asked for a printable so that you can stick it up on the fridge and have something to look at and something to try. So if you'd like to have a printable, then you can go to the show notes, which is at raisingplayfultots.com/130 to download it. So if you missed that show, then pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that one or find the archive of all the other shows that we have at raisingplayfultots.com/shows. Well, this week's show, I'm excited because I'm talking to Paz Chetnik from internationalcravings.com about negotiating worldwide travel with young children. You know, sometimes we dream of just jacking it all in and traveling around the world, living life with our kids. You know, no more 9-to-5 job, no more house, just taking the kids and going living in another country. Haven't we all dreamed of that at some time? Well, Paz actually did that and is still doing that with her family. And we're excited that she could take time out to share what it's like to go from thinking about doing something like that and then doing it, actually living it. We talk about China, Malaysia, travels that they're planning to do, travels that they've just been through, and all the bits in between, how you manage the children, what the children get to do, the languages that you learn, the cultural traditions that you pick up. It's always inspiring, I find, to hear stories like these, and it really got me thinking about moving again. Stephanie Langford of Keeper of the Home was on the show in December talking about Christmas traditions, and she's currently doing exactly the same thing. She's currently on the road with her husband and her family, traveling around the world. That's living in places for stretches of time and talking about them, experiencing them, and then moving somewhere else. I think she's in South America at the moment, coming up from North America down to South America, and she's going to be zigzagging around the world and reporting back on it. It's just so exciting to see families that actually prepare and just go ahead and do that. So it can be done, and Paz and I had a lot of fun sharing stories. This interview runs a little longer than usual, but I feel you'll really enjoy it, and I hope it will really encourage and inspire you and kind of give you a glimpse into what it's like to live in different places and experience things and kind of gain a whole new perspective on things. I'll pop in at the end to round off things, and I'll be right back after this short break with the interview. You can listen to Raising Playful Tots while you're on the move by choosing Stitcher. Stitcher is a free app available for your smartphone. Downloading this app is really quick and easy. Enter TOTS, that's T-O-T-S, during registration to be entered to win in their monthly draw. Then you'll receive the latest episode right there waiting for you of Raising Playful TOTS. Not just that, but you can discover hundreds of other popular new shows. You can find all of this by visiting stitcher.com/tots. That's stitcher.com/tots. Today I'm talking to Paz Chetnik, who along with her husband and two small children have decided to live life in China, leaving behind their jobs, home and community. She's here today to talk about raising playful tots while travelling around the world. Welcome to the show, Paz.
Hello.
Tell us about your family. I'm really interested to know a little bit more about you guys.
We are a pretty normal family, husband and wife team. And then we have one small daughter. Well, she's 5 now. She was 3 when we moved. And then I have a terrible but wonderful son who is 3 now. However, he was 1 when we originally moved.
Cool. So how did you come to be traveling around the world with your family? What's the story about that?
The story, it goes back probably till like 2010, and we were in Wisconsin, which is a very cold place in the U.S., and we just kind of had settled into a routine, and every day was the same. So we were doing the same things every day, and then we found ourselves occupying ourselves on the weekends with errands and stores and just things that really didn't make us happy. They were more chores, but we felt like we had to get them done. We were both very unhappy and just kind of going through the routines. We had some friends that were living in South Korea. They were single men. So as a mother of 2, it seemed like something that was very far and maybe an expiration dream that we had missed. But one day I mentioned to my husband, I said, what if we moved and, you know, just did stuff instead of buying things or, you know, going to Target or Walmart for everyone in the U.S. And he looked at me and was like, that sounds awesome. That's a perfect idea. So from there, then we kind of had to figure out how to do it, but we both knew that we didn't want our weekends to be filled with errands, and I saw my children probably a couple hours in the evening, and at that time, I was mostly exhausted and not really happy. So we were just going through the motions of, you know, food, bedtime routine, bed, and we would then just veg in front of the TV. And we both kind of looked at each other and just felt like, you know, there's more to life than this, or at least we should be doing more than what we were.
So how did it all come about, the planning of it? Was it a long process?
It was a long process. We had to get rid of debt. So we had to pay off some credit cards before we felt like we could go. And we knew we needed to save money, and we had 0 money in our savings account. We realized that we had 0 money because we were spending all of our money on stuff that we really didn't like or need, but it was just kind of this routine that we had built up. So we put together a plan. We knew we had to pay off our credit cards, and we knew we had to put money away. We then decided to look for how we were going to do it. I love training, and I do a lot of cross-cultural training now. Previously, I had been doing a lot of training in the nonprofit world, and I worked for a company that was affiliated with Microsoft and did some training there. So I said, you know what, I could be a teacher too. You know, I don't mind being up in front of people or kids for that matter, and really thought, you know, if these guys can do it, you know, these single guys in Korea, then I can do it too. So we kind of started from there.
Oh, that's perfect. So you've decided that you're going to travel, and you decide to go to China. How do you handle language and school?
Well, before we decided China, we actually didn't know where we were going to go, right? We looked at the map on the world. Uh-huh. like, okay, where are we going to go? We really first wanted to go to Turkey, just because Turkey sounds so cool and so different. And, you know, just when you think of Turkey, you think of, like, all these awesome colors and food. So I applied to a few jobs in Turkey and just got a really bad response from the employers that were interested in me. They weren't very organized, didn't really seem like they had things together, and there were a lot of bad reviews online. We then decided that I needed to get certified in teaching, and we went through all of the possibilities. Like, we thought about me going back to get my master's to be able to do it, to do, you know, things that really take a lot of time and a lot of money. And then I came across a couple sites online that do teaching certificates, right? So you can become ESOL certified online. So we decided I needed to do that. And then I kept getting all these emails from companies in China saying, are you, you know, would you like to come to China? We hadn't ever thought of China. And then when I started seeing the money, because we knew we had to make a certain amount of money every month, some of the Latin American countries don't pay that as high. So we knew we needed like Eastern Europe or Asia, because those are the higher paying teaching jobs. And we didn't know if my husband was going to be able to keep his job or not. We were planning with the intention that he was going to go in one day and just kind of quit. He had been the primary income maker since our son was born.
Right.
So our son was born, and I cut back in my role at work, and he was the one making the money. So the idea was is that he was going to go in and kind of quit his job, and we still had student loans to pay and life insurance, all that fun stuff. So China kind of picked us, really.
Yeah, I see that.
But I'm sorry, what was the original question? I just wanted to mention how we kind of got to China.
That's okay, but I was asking, how did you handle the language issue and schooling with the children and yourselves, really?
That's a great question, because honestly, now when I do the cross-cultural consulting, and I do a lot for China, one of the biggest things people talk about is language, and we really didn't even... Like, we didn't even look at a Chinese video or Chinese language lesson before we went over. We had no idea how to speak a word of Chinese. So we landed and really thought that we would be able to find more people who speak English. Note to self, they don't. So it was a huge shock for us how many people we could not communicate at all.
Oh,
you know?
My goodness.
We landed and we're like, I mean, it's amazing how much communication or how much language you use when you can't use it.
Yes.
Like, I'm trying to tell you I have to go to the bathroom, but you can't, you know, so you're squatting and all these.
Yes.
You know, little charades games to what's going on. But we, a lot of the schools in China, or any country really, have English-speaking teachers there, right? So their whole staff spoke Chinese and English, and anyone at like a nice hotel will normally speak some English. So we really just kind of dove in head first. We had no experience with the language. Our daughter was 3 and our son was 1. She actually picked up the Chinese within about 3 months of us being there. She started speaking Chinese, well, not fluently at that point, but started speaking it to get things. And it was because we decided to hire a Chinese speaking or Mandarin only speaking nanny or, you know, help, which is
yes.
very, very common there to have. So we knew we wanted that, right? Because, like, who doesn't want that?
Yeah. Yes.
And coming from the States, that isn't something that people have, you know, so it was good. And we got her involved in a lot of activities in the community that we lived in. My husband and I did sign up for language courses, which we took, but we actually quit those about couple weeks in, just because we realized we were learning more being out and about, you know, kind of trial and error.
Yes.
Language, and we had other things we wanted to focus our time on.
Wow. So you had a real drop in the fire almost when you landed because you had no experience of what you were going to encounter at all.
No, I mean, we had watched some shows on, you know, the Discovery Channel or National Geographic. I had read some books, but China particularly is a very different culture. I mean, it's only been open to the world for about 25 years. So, you know, there's a lot of places where, you know, if you go out of the hotel zone, you know, you're in China, right? Where things haven't moved for, you know, decades. So a lot of people don't speak English or have ever seen a person with round eyes because it's such a homogenous society. You know, so we get to be famous some days.
I understand that. Yay. What about schooling? Because you said that your daughter was three. Did she have any experience of school there? And how were your experiences of school because you were teaching?
We did enroll her in a school in China. Kids actually start going to school when they're two. We enrolled her in not a government school, but a local school. We actually didn't have that great of an experience. Her Chinese wasn't very good when we put her in. She could just do a few things. It's a very long day, so they normally get there at 7:30 and then they leave at about 5:30. So for a three-year-old, you know, that's
a long day, yeah.
It's an intense day. So after about a month, we ended up taking her out just because the class sizes are 45 kids to two teachers, roughly. So she wasn't getting any attention, and since she did need almost extra attention because she was foreign, they weren't able to give that to her. So we ended up taking her out. What we did was, I'm not sure what the term is for it, but we ended up hiring private teachers, so private Chinese teachers, to come to our house, and she would get Chinese language and writing classes at our house for a few hours a week. And then we also, we did Kung Fu as a family. So we would go out and do Kung Fu every morning with a group of, local Chinese people. So it was all, you know, language exercise. And then she would do little classes at the school that I taught at. So she would come and do like music or dance or English classes at the school that I taught. So that ended up kind of being her like ad hoc education, a little bit of everything from a little bit of everywhere.
That's lovely. It sounds really lovely. So I'm really curious to how you handle stuff, because you didn't just stay in China. You actually moved around and visited a few more places. How did you handle toys? Because a three-year-old and a one-year-old have the most amount of toys. I can't think of a combination age like that doesn't have just lots and lots of toys and books and electronics and clothes, and yet you were traveling around. How did you handle that?
Well, when we were getting ready to pack up to leave, to move, my husband and I, we thought, you know, anything that we purchase our child has to have some sort of function. So it has to be either creative, so an art, educational, or exercise oriented, right?
Yeah.
So you can't just be playing. I mean, it sounds silly, but it can't just be playing for the sake of playing, right? There should be some sort of other attribute included in that play to make play more educational, if you will. So that really pares down a lot of toys. Another thing is, too, is that we have become, and are still, you know, minimalists. Not to the extent that some people are, but we roughly travel with about three suitcases for the four of us, right? So, and that includes all of our clothes, medication, books, and toys. So we've really kind of gotten rid of toys and tried to make activities as a family more what we do versus, just kind of playing in a room with toys. One thing is, too, is that we're also very good at purging, right? We are not attached to material things anymore, even my iPhone or my Kindle. We do like our hard drives. Our hard drives are very important. So I will say we are a bit attached, though. That's all our work on it. But whenever we do move around, we have had our children actually give their things away. So we give them to other families, and we have our children do it. So it's not just us, you know, kind of taking their stuff and giving it, but we like to get them in the process. And now our daughter, who's 5, the other day I said, you know, you kind of got a lot of clothes, because I was doing way too much laundry. She said, you know, Mama, I think we should probably give some to those, you know, to those kids we saw the other day. And I was like, you think they'd like them? She said, yeah, I don't really need that many clothes. You know, and so that's really exciting for me to hear that she's, one, okay with getting rid of things, not so attached to them, and number two, you know, that she also realizes that, you know, 75% of the world lives on much less than what we have. Yeah. It's a good lesson.
Yeah, and you've really lived that lifestyle. You've not just talked about it, you've actually been doing it as well, and I really wish that we could do that more with the, you know, my boys, because it's harder, I think, once you settle down to do that. You can make the conscious effort that you want to, but actually doing it can be a lot harder. But it's really inspirational when you hear somebody else saying it and doing it and knowing that their children can too. It's really amazing.
No, thank you. Well, you can do it too.
I know. Yes. Yes, we can, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about the day-to-day life with moving around to different places, handling discipline and routines is something that, I don't know, needs to be similar wherever you are so that the children know what's expected of them. But when you're living in different places, I mean, they're completely different cultures from what you're used to. How do you transfer all of those rules and routines and discipline things that you do at home? Does it change? So I guess the question is, what's day-to-day life like handling discipline and routine?
Well, I think one of the things that we've become okay with is that it's okay to not have a routine sometimes. Right? Mm-hmm. So just being okay with, you know what, for this week, everything is going to be crazy. So embrace crazy, right? Because I notice if I focus so much on, you know, we're on a plane, then we're on a bus, then we're on a tuk-tuk in Thailand, driving around trying to find our next apartment, and I'm worried about them, you know, going to bed at 8 p.m., I'll just drive myself crazy. So guess what? The kids aren't going to go to bed at 8 p.m. tonight. Oh, well. You know, the world doesn't end. It's okay. So we've really tried to embrace that of just, you know, not being so worried about what we're supposed to be doing and really worrying about what we are doing. So I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So just like enjoying it. And the kids do enjoy it. I think breaking routines sometimes also makes your kids more flexible. Sometimes I meet kids who can't go to bed unless they've had their bath and it's exactly at 8 o'clock. And I think, oh my goodness. You know, like, that just puts your life into a box. But it's not the kids' fault. You know, it's also the parents.
Yeah.
You know, who have, you know, they've made it almost like a ritual. So we've never been extremely ritualistic. But on the flip side, I love routines. And my daughter, she specifically thrives off routines. So what we normally do is after we've found our house, you know, found the local grocery store, my husband and I will sit down and we will write a schedule, right? So we'll actually physically write it out, verbally talk about it, and then hang it up on the wall. So we'll tell our daughter and now our son, because he's 3, okay, we're now living in Mexico. This is what our day is going to look like, because people do things different in Mexico. You eat, you know, there's a cena that you have at 9 o'clock at night. So we'll accommodate how you eat a little bit, but you have to understand this is the culture here and this is what, you know, we want to embrace it. So this is what we're going to do. But mapping it out and putting it on paper is really easy for me because I like routine. It's also accountability. If it says on there that at 4 o'clock I get to sit down and work, you know, I can say to my husband, hey, you know, I need you to watch the kids or I need you to go do this because it's 4 o'clock and we agreed that at 4 o'clock I get to work. So there's no argument about, hey, I need to work. No, I need to work. Also, you know, then with the children, let's say you don't want to get up or do something, you know, I said, well, here school starts at, you know, at 7, so you have to get up at 6, and this is our routine. And doing that, and we do actually, we write it out, we paste it up on the refrigerator or the wall, And every once in a while, we'll get off of it, and then we'll have to, or something will change. We'll start another class, or I'll take on a new project, or maybe my husband has a new project he has to work on, mm-hmm. and we alter the routine. But then we talk about it, and we actually try to change the schedule, and it makes us much more productive, and it creates a lot less fighting between my husband and I, because there's a set plan. We're no longer bickering about who has to do what when, even if I have to remind him every once in a while.
Yeah. Well, it works both ways, I've noticed, though. My husband is very quick to remind me. You did say that you would be stopping around about this time. You're like, oh, yes, well. So, yeah, I know exactly how you feel. What about handling discipline? Because different places seem to bring out different things in the children. I know when we were living overseas and it was very warm, it seemed to be... it make the children a bit high and crazy at certain times. The weather seemed to have an effect. It seemed, you know, with discipline. I'm sure it wasn't quite like that. But how are you handling discipline being in different places?
You know, the biggest issue with discipline for us, and it's been a good learning experience for me as a mother, is the different discipline cultures in each country, right? So discipline in the U.S. is so much different than discipline in Thailand or China or Mexico. You know, so we've really tried to stick to our core family values. You know, also can vary today, depending how naughty they are. But we try not to let the outside influence us, unless, of course, we think, hey, that's a great idea, you know, or that's something interesting. We also try to let our kids, you know, just be kids more. You know, so many other cultures just let kids run in the street and play soccer and all sorts of craziness. And not that they should be playing in streets with cars, but you know, sometimes I think we try to make these padded rooms for our kids to play in when, you know, dirt and soot and all of that stuff is so good for them too. So we've really been a lot more relaxed on what type of activities they can do. And, you know, your children will surprise you because you'll be so impressed by their abilities that, you know, you kind of think, oh, I feel bad that I restricted them in certain ways for so long, because other cultures don't. You know, children are much more independent in other cultures, I think, than they are in ours, in different ways, of course. But just letting them kind of have fun and get dirty and do what some of the local kids are doing and interact in that type of activity. Because, like you said, in places where it's hot or maybe it's really cold, they already know what the climate is. And the kids have created local, you know, created games around that already.
Yeah.
So to just kind of embrace what's around you and go with it. But on the flip side, we also, you know, try to stick to our own discipline values, even if we I've gotten yelled at very many times for my discipline actions in multiple countries. You know, I've had people come up and yell at me about what I'm doing and how I'm doing it, and it's given me a much thicker skin because I've double checked what I've been doing and I'm okay with it. I'm okay to stand up to someone for my eating and my parenting skills, which may not have happened if we had stayed, you know, in Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, I think it's perspective, isn't it? Once you have moved out of the bubble that you live in and live in another country, all of a sudden you start to examine the values that you have because they are right in front of your face, because other people are doing something very different often to the way in which you've done something. And you start to wonder, am I doing this for the right reasons? And many times it's absolutely, and sometimes you are surprised by yourself and go, well, no, actually, I quite like that other idea that's there. And
yeah, no, totally. That is it.
Yeah. What about your views of cultures? You've been traveling a lot. We haven't mentioned all of the countries that you have been traveling through. If you could give us a brief list of what those are. I'm wondering, how has travel really deepened your view of cultures?
Well, first, the cultures, or the countries, I should say, that we've lived in are, so China, Malaysia, Thailand, and Mexico. And then the U.S., of course. So.
Uh-huh.
So we, I mean, I think seeing every culture, there's things that you just love how different people are, and yet we're so the same, you know? I mean, it's so just kind of great to see in someone who's so different than myself, but everyone's worried about, you know, are their kids getting the right food? Are they getting the right education? Are they, you know, their religious beliefs? It's just, it's such a great experience to get to see all of it and live in it. You know, we really try to live rurally, or I should say, like, among local people versus in the hotel zone, because it doesn't make sense to go to another country for a month and stay in a hotel the whole time. You know, that it defeats the whole purpose. It's just been really exciting. You know, the food is awesome. It's so good. It's just amazing. And getting to learn different culture as far as, like, traditions, cultural traditions.
Yeah.
It has been so eye-opening to us and to our kids. And seeing our kids embrace different traditions is great too. It's so much fun seeing them say local, you know, the local hello, you know, with, if there's a gesture along with it, you know, doing that to people as we walk in a store or go to someone's home, you know, and their ability to go to every country and understand that this is what people do here. So we're going to embrace it and we're going to go with it. And they're wanting to do that with us has really just been very cool.
So have you got any stories about things that your children have experienced since being overseas that perhaps they wouldn't have experienced in quite the same way if they had been back home in the States?
Are you thinking of maybe education or...
Yeah, education or festivals or experiences like that.
One story is our son was potty trained at about a year and a half. Right. And a boy being potty trained at a year and a half in the U.S. at least is almost unheard of. And he did that through split pants, which they do in China. So basically a big hole in the middle of the pants, and the boys and the girls private parts or
yeah.
stuff, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
It's just kind of flopping in the wind, you know? I mean, it's just.
Yes.
They're open and out there, and he learned to potty train basically by peeing all over China, right, where we were at, as do every other little boy, right? So and girl, and it was, at first I was horrified. I was like, oh my goodness, we can't be doing this, this is awful, you know, because in the U.S. you would never do that. That would just be unheard of. They probably kick you out of, you know, your city or something.
Yes.
And so, you know, since we had the Chinese nanny, we just kind of were like, well, you know what? She's helping us with this. This is what she does. We're here. Let's just go with it. Let's see what happens. And it was such a great experience, I think, for us. And I don't know about for him, you know, what he'll think about it later. He probably won't remember it. But the ability for him to be potty trained so quickly, you know, really within 6 months of us being there, because God knows I wouldn't have done it at a year and a half, you know, he'd probably still be in diapers. Three.
Yeah.
But it was just so much fun. And then one time when we were in Malaysia, we went to Little India in Malaysia. So we went there, and we've never been to India, and my daughter just fell in love with music, you know, the Indian music, and she was all into it, and she found a you know, a traditional Indian dress that she wanted to buy, so we bought that for her. And then the Indian women, they wear dots in the middle of their heads that signifies if they're married or not married. And so she bought little dots for her head that were sparkly. She just really was so interested in Indian music and Indian culture. And this was in Malaysia. You know, he's a lot of energy, so we need energy to calm down a little bit before we go to India. Another experience that we had with our kids in China was our nanny would take them to some beading shops. So old ladies sit on the corners and they make, they string beads. I don't know what they do with these beads or what happens to them. And so our children would go, and it's the typical, you know, older women gossiping and, you know, sipping their tea. And it's very stereotypical when you see the image. And so she would know, because by then our daughter had learned Mandarin. So she's fluent in Mandarin right now. You know, at the age of 5, she speaks Mandarin and a little Cantonese she can understand. When we would go later with her through the city or through our little part of Guangzhou, she would tell us certain things and we would say, well, how do you know that? Oh, I heard the old women talking about it. Or, how do you know that? Well, the old women told me today. You know, here's an American girl, at the age of 4, sitting with these 80-year-old women, and she would help them bead, you know, their necklaces. And I think that's something that we could never have given her anywhere else. You know, even if we went back today, it probably wouldn't happen the same way. It's really uplifting to have those memories.
That's really brilliant. You've been traveling about, so let's think of some cultural activities that you've embraced as a family because of travel. So things that you now do in your family because you've been traveling and you saw it somewhere else and you've wanted to keep hold of it.
Well, I think our biggest thing is the healthy eating. We've completely changed our diet. In our time traveling, I've lost about 35 pounds. So I think that's 17 kilos.
Whoa, go you.
Thank you. And my husband actually lost like 35 kilos in our times that we've traveled, right? Of course, he always loses more than I do.
They always do, don't they?
And it's really just been, you know, the natural food, and it's not expensive, you know. That's the great part, is really looking at, you know, ethnic shops or traveling around. We still eat with chopsticks. We love eating with chopsticks. But more importantly, you know, our kids love vegetables. They ask, like, if I don't make vegetables for a full day, they will come to me and say, Mama, I have not had my corn. I have not had my lima beans. I have not had my, you know, my tofu. My children love tofu. And, you know, here I am, like, okay, I got pizza yesterday because I was so just tired. I didn't have time to do something. And I'm getting scolded by my 3-year-old that I didn't make him his vegetables. And it's just, I think, I know we never would have had that. But in every country that we've gone to, it's, you know, the natural food, the healthy eating. And we hope that that stays with us for the rest of our lives.
Oh, that's really lovely to hear. So let's talk a little bit about toys and play. What are your children's favorite toys, would you say, at the moment?
Well, my son, so he is a very hyperactive 3-year-old. He loves trucks or race cars. So we buy him the Hot Wheels because they're very small. So he can have 4 or 5 and they fit in his backpack nicely. So his favorite toy is definitely his Hot Wheels. Because they go fast. Just
of
like
course.
And for my daughter, she's about 5, so she's 5 and a half right now, and she has just gotten into the stage of drawing on her own, right? So she wasn't at that, you know, where she could just draw by herself. So right now she's really into drawing, and she's learning how to read and writing. So right now, you know, when we're in the car, we like to sound out words together, and so she's always writing right now, which is great. A year ago, she wasn't in that stage, so it's a quieter.
Yeah, I can see that. So let's talk about your play when you were younger. What are your best memories of play?
I think my best memories of play that I have is playing with my older cousins. I'm half Mexican, so I speak Spanish and English, but we would go and visit my older cousins in Mexico maybe every 2 years. And I would play with them and go to little stores, and you get like a piece of chocolate, you know. And then in the U.S., where I lived my whole life, I loved riding my bike. So just kind of getting out and being, I lived in an area where you could ride on the road and it was okay. So, you know, you meet your friend at the corner and you guys go into the woods.
That's nice. That's really nice. So what would you say you are as a family? Are you a homemade Play-Doh family, a store-bought Play-Doh family, or a no Play-Doh family?
When I saw this question, I have to say I love it, because I've never thought of that before. I've never thought what kind of Play-Doh person I am. But I am not a homemade Play-Doh person, so I knew that. If I were going to buy Play-Doh, if I were going to play with Play-Doh, I would do store-bought Play-Doh. We actually take Play-Doh on plane trips a lot, so Play-Doh's good for plane trips. I don't keep Play-Doh in the house, though, because it's very messy. So it always seems to end up someplace, you know, to be. A good alternative that we've been doing to Play-Doh is pipe cleaners. So kids actually really like pipe cleaners, and they're very bendable. And so that's kind of our new plane ride activity. Because, you know, most plane rides that we take are, it's very funny. My daughter the other day, we took a plane ride and it was about 2 hours. And she was like, will we get off? I said, yes, yeah, time to get off. She's like, well, I wanted to sit on the plane more. What was that? I was like, nothing. Both of them were like, why are we getting off? This is only 2 hours. I don't know what this is. Hi. Rides are between, you know, 5 to 16 hours, so they are used to an 8-hour plane ride, or a, you know, they've done a 17-hour plane ride before. So I'm like, no, let's get off the plane. We do not need to stay on the plane longer.
No, that's amazing to think that they have such an experiences like that already tucked behind them. Their passports must be really good. Do you get to stamp them as you go along?
Yeah, so they have to be stamped, you know, now that our son's 3, when they're 2, they need their own plane seat, you know,
yes.
So now
they have
his plane seat, which, it hurts the checkbook, but it is better for him to have his own seat, it is.
Oh, yes. They get heavy after a while when they're tired and sleeping. You want to be able to pop them down and they'd be fine.
Exactly. And then our kids actually end up playing a lot on the floor on planes, you know, because they kind of make like a little alcove or a little fort, if you will, you know, with the 2 seats on the floor. That's been, again, like I said, you know, before I probably would have been like, oh, the plane floor is dirty. But when you're on the plane for 17 hours, the plane floor becomes totally okay to do anything on.
Absolutely. I can understand that completely. So can you think of 3 play activities that you probably do every week? You just talked a little bit about pipe cleaners or Chanel straws or and playing with those on the plane. But can you think of 3 or so play activities maybe that you probably sneak in each week to do?
We like to do a lot of shows in our family. So I do a lot of videos for our blog, and I'm currently working on a food blog called Crazy Yummy with all the food stuff that we've learned. So I'm doing a lot of video, and our kids have also, they love doing video of themselves. We do a lot of live performances in our house. There's still room, so if anyone wants to come join us, more than welcome.
Very nice.
So we kind of put on our kids will put on music, and, you know, my husband and I, we get to sit down and the kids do a show, and then we get pulled in somehow or another. And that's a lot of fun. We currently have been stationary for about 3 months. So we've picked up some used bicycles here. Our kids have been up to, we've been doing a lot of bicycling and scooter activities. That's been a lot of fun. And then we always try to do like a little bit of cuddle time. Every once in a while, I try to pop in a movie, and instead of doing things while they're watching a movie, I sit down and talk to them and try to ask questions about what they think about the movie, you know? So not just having it be just cuddle time, but, you know, oh, you thought that was funny. Why do you think that was funny? You know, and then we kind of talk about it later. So just some good mom and me time.
Connecting time.
Because especially my daughter's a little more, she likes to cuddle. She's a cuddler. My son will hop up and cuddle, and then he's down again, and then he'll hop up and cuddle, you know, and then he's down again. But yeah, we try to get some cuddle time in and some talk time.
So what two actions have you taken in the last 2 years that have had a really positive effect on your life?
I would say number one would be getting rid of all of our stuff, right? You don't realize how connected you are with your stuff until you let it all go. So that's been really great. Moving around, even when we're stationary, we don't accumulate like we used to, and it frees up so much time. You know, it's cleaning time, it's buying time, it's storage time, it's organizing time, all of that time that before we wasted spending on things, right, stuff that you later we get to spend together as a family. So no matter where you are, where we are, it works for us. And then I'd say the second thing is the healthy eating. You know, I noticed a difference in us, a difference in our children, a difference, especially since we're here in the U.S., a difference from our children to other children. I'm a firm believer that it has a lot to do with the food that kids are eating. And then if I could add a third one in, I would say it's the time that we get to spend together. So we, like my husband and I, we probably spend too much time together right now. And we spend too much time with our kids, which it's a wonderful thing. You know, I'm not complaining at all, but you know, when you're ready to set out to travel the world, I always make the joke, you really better like your family, right? Because like
yes. It makes total sense, because you get to spend a lot of time with them.
We do. And the difference between my daughter's first 3 years of her life and my son's first 3 years of his life are so different. It's just really been great to be a bigger part in his childhood. And, you know, there's some things that my husband and I, you know, we can't do because we have kids when we travel. And we just say, you know what, when they're in college, we'll come back and do that activity, you know?
Yeah, that'd be really cool. Super.
Yeah, it's just great to spend that time together as a family and really experiencing things together versus, oh, you know, your kids go here and they experience things at this school all day with someone else. You go to work or go here and you experience life all day with this group of people. And the time you're actually experiencing life together and growing together is so little, or at least ours was, right? And then with our new life, you know, we tell stories about things we did together versus things that we did separate.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing your story as you've been going along. I'm just really amazed at how, maybe there was more to it than what you've explained, but that you just kind of decided that we don't like what this is and that we're just going to go. I speak to so many parents that find that they would love to do that, but feel that they can't communicate that with their partner, and for them to be able to just go and really live out what you are saying that you've done. And so I just wonder, how would you encourage people that really do want to do this change? They want to live somewhere else or go be somewhere else for a little while, but are finding all of the things that you have to do to get yourself out of the situation really holding them back?
That normally the situations or the reasons that's holding you back are society's reasons. So we had a lot of people, family members, close acquaintances, telling us how silly and irresponsible and what bad parents we were, what awful people we were, for wanting to do what we wanted to do. It came to a point, we were actually in church one day when it hit us that we really had to do this, listening to a sermon by David Ramsey. So it was like a telecast thing. So it's not like we were in his, but it was a telecast thing. And he was talking about, you know, things in life are really tools, and that's not life. Right, so a house is a tool because it keeps rain off of your head. Money is a tool because it lets you do things, but that's not your life. And that really hit us because we were like, oh my goodness, he's so right. So what is our life? And we didn't have a life, right? That's what we, is that we were just mm-hmm. kind of living our life through our tools, not through our spirit inside of us. And we were denying ourselves. And we thought, well, why? Well, because we knew people would be upset with us doing it. So once we came to the term that we were okay with everyone hating us because we wanted to do what we wanted to do, then it became very easy. You know, telling the people who are closest to you that you're going to leave and, you know, go to China for a year is actually a lot harder than you'd think it would be. I don't know, right? Yeah. You know, because you think those are the people that are supposed to support you in whatever it is that you want to become. And I think anyone who's ever had to make really hard life choices has found that that's not the case. And we found that. So that was very difficult for me and my husband personally. But I think it even gave us more power because we thought, you know, if you can't support us in this, like, why are you holding us back? Oh, because you should have a house. You need to have a house to, you know, to have your kids. You need to have a really good job and lots of money. And you need to have a second car. And you need to have this. And we were just like, okay, that's silly. You know, like, that's not a, those aren't reasons. You know, those are tools. Those are things. And we have all those things. And we aren't happy. So isn't that more important? You know, we had two cars, we got married and bought a house. I was pregnant in, you know, 6 months after getting married, I was pregnant. You know, 2 years later, we were pregnant with my other son. We had bought another car, you know. I mean, we had done everything to the T of what, you know, some TV show would tell you you have to do or what everyone thinks they have to do. And we just, we looked at ourselves and thought, this isn't what we want. And I think just really being okay with that. And once you're okay with that and you're okay with things being difficult for you to get what you want, like, it wasn't easy. You know, we had to really watch our money, you know, get creative with, you know, with food for the month, you know, with activities to entertain ourselves. But once you're okay with it being a little difficult, then it's like, well, it doesn't matter anymore. You know, that kind of the struggle no longer becomes a struggle and more of a challenge.
Yeah, and you're united as well doing it together. I think that makes all of the difference because you're both working together.
It is. I mean, I think if he would say, you know what, I really don't want to go, you know, our story would be different. You know, and one thing we have that is, you know, there's some kids that have, or some parents with children who don't want to go. You know, and there's always some sort of tug and pull between if you listen to your child or if you don't listen to your child. But for example, this January we were supposed to leave again, and I said to my daughter, you know, okay, we're going to move again. And she said, I really just don't want to move. I'm kind of tired. And she's five. So I said to her, you know, we sat down and we talk about a lot of things with them. They get to pick their education. You know, we bring them in educational stories. They get to pick any activity that they want to be in. And that's something that we've learned as well, is that, you know, your kids, no matter how old they are, they know more about themselves than we do. You know, they know who they are. Children are who they are normally by the time they're six. Their personality or their core persona has been established by the time you're 6 years old, they say. When we talk to them and listen to them, it makes, one, the family so much better, but two, it's opened up our lines of communication already. She said, I don't want to move, and I was actually kind of tired of moving as well because we had just done like 3 or 4 big moves within 2 months. I said, you know, you really don't want to. She said, no. She said, I want to go to school. I said, okay, because she hadn't been in school for about 2 months. I said, okay, you really want to go to school? She said, yeah, I want to go to school, and I need to start taking Chinese classes because I'm forgetting some of my Chinese. And I said, yeah, I've noticed that too. So we stayed. So we are where we are right now because of our five-year-old. I explained to her after she was done with school, you know, Mommy and Daddy really like moving. We like doing other things, but we will make sure that she gets to go to a more liberal type of school. You know, we'd like to do Spanish next. And so she said, okay. She's very excited to learn Spanish. She knows a little bit of Spanish right now. So she's currently kind of trilingual, but she needs to be, you know, she doesn't speak Spanish fluently. And so she was okay to learning how to do that. Said, okay, when you're done with school, and she looked at me, she said, you promised we stay till my end of school. And I told her, I said, I promise. So my husband might have to go to New York for a little bit. And I told him, I said, okay, but you have to realize, like, I have to stay here with her because, you know, I promised that she could stay till the end of her school year. So we will do whatever we can to make sure that, you know, we keep that promise. But I'm really so happy that at this age and, you know, in our relationship, we can have these type of conversations. And we did listen to her. So that was kind of a roundabout way of me saying, you know, you do have to listen to people in your family, but kids don't rule all the time. But
No, I think you've explained that really well, that when you do understand them and you have such knowledge of them because you spent a good amount of time with them, then it does matter within the family how everybody feels, and you have to act on what you feel is right. Yeah. And that's exactly what
and
you guys
have
done.
And she feels like she has a voice, which is so important. You know, I think so many kids, and especially more girls maybe than boys, feel like they don't have a voice. You know, and her wants and desires are just as important as mine.
Yeah. And you were able to bend this way, and you were able to accommodate or do, and that makes all of the difference.
I think, you know, if you can't make those adjustments, you know, then it's harder. But I think anybody can make some adjustments if they listen to their child, right? Maybe they don't have to be in as many activities. You know, maybe they can sleep in on Saturdays, or maybe they can do an activity that maybe you're not so excited about as a parent, you know, because you're not them, basically.
Yeah. Well, this has been a lot of fun, and I know we could probably talk for a very long time about all of your journeys overseas and the wonderful things that you're doing with your kids and your family. Just want you to let us know where we can find you online so we can continue to follow your journey. And have you got any plans for where you're thinking of going next?
Well, you can find me on internationalcravings.com, and then my new site dedicated to the food portion of our journeys is Crazy Yummy. So it's recently up. There isn't a lot there yet, but soon there will be more stuff. So.
Very good.
One thing that I saw, you know, that I was thinking about is that, you know, things change so rapidly. I saw in one of your questions was, what were you doing in 2000, right?
Yes.
I really like that question because I was graduating from high school in the year 2000. But, you know, 3 years ago, I was very heavy, had credit card debt, we still own our house. We still have a house. We owned a house, was very unhappy. So it wasn't that long ago that we were other people, which I think is so important to relay, is that it wasn't overnight, but it wasn't like 20 years ago either.
Yes. Yeah. Oh.
And our next move, there might be an opportunity in New York. So we might do some time, spend some time in New York for a little bit. We've actually never been to New York, but we really like large cities. What we do to pick a destination to live in to live in is we've created a list of things that are really important to us as a family, and we like our communities to kind of reflect the people that we are, or people we want to meet, or communities we want to be involved in. So that has led us to Istanbul, Turkey. So maybe I will get back to Turkey, or Quito, Ecuador. So those are the two countries we will be, or cities we should be, will be moving to if we don't move to New York.
Wow, I look forward to hearing a lot more.
But it all has to do with the language for our kids. We're just not sure if we want to do the Spanish right away or if we should do that later. So, but yes, Turkey is very high on my list.
Excellent. Today, I've been talking to Paz from internationalcravings.com. Don't forget to go and check out her site and follow her as she starts her next adventure. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
I'll be right back after this short break.
This is Emily Rempe of ProductiveParenting.com, and you are listening to Raising Playful Tots.
I mentioned Stephanie Langford at the top of the show. You can follow her travels via entrefamily.com/travels. She's sharing her food journey over at Simple Bites as well. If you're looking for ideas about raising global children closer to home, we have the show Growing Up Global Local, taken from the amazing book Growing Up Global, where I talk to the author Homer Tavangar about easy and simple ways we can share a global perspective without leaving the country. That's at raisingplayfultots.com/108. That's raisingplayfultots.com/108. I also have a collaborative Pinterest board with lots of activities there on the same types of topics, just like the Africa mask that I talked about. That one's pinned there, and you can find that one at pinterest.com/Melitza/global-diverse-kids. Marnie from Carrots Are Orange shared a personal post in the Slow Parenting, Simple Parenting community this week called Simple Ways to Find Mindful Parenting. Hayley also shared one on one-on-one time when you've got a sibling with a disability. You can find both these posts and conversations around them over in our Google Plus community, Slow Parenting, Simple Parenting. You can get there by visiting gplus.to/slowparenting. That's gplus.to/slowparenting. So that's about it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to Raising Playful Tots. For show notes, links to all that we've been talking about, or to leave a comment about this episode, visit raisingplayfultots.com/131. That's 131. You can also reach us via voicemail by using our feedback number, which is raisingplayfultots.com/feedback. And it's voicemail, so it's free. If you love the show and you found value in it, would you do me a favor and go over to iTunes? The quick link for that is raisingplayfultots.com/iTunes page and give us a review. Thumbs up on Stitcher or your podcast mobile app. Find us on Pinterest, like us on Facebook, join in our Slow Parenting, Simple Parenting community on Google+. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 131. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye!